For this lecture this evening, this is I choose the following title: Can constellation help us to heal trauma? And when we say something can heal trauma, what does it mean? In the end, it would mean that we can heal illnesses, we can heal mental illnesses as well as physical illnesses. And on the other hand, we can do something to improve relationships. What seems quite important for us as human beings, because we depend so much on our relationships. And in the end, we can say that what keeps us healthy and what makes us sick, in the end, are relationships. It's all about relationship. Health issues, in a big way, are issues of relationships. And the question is always, are we able to have good and health, good relationships, or are we in destructive relationships? And one of the outcomes of destructive relationships is illness, mental illness as well as physical illness. So if we are talking about trauma, in the end we're talking about illnesses, and we're talking about relationships. And I will show you how this connects, and maybe some of you do not know what constellations are, but I hope in the end you have an understanding what I mean about constellation, what I mean with this word constellation, what's behind that. It's a method. It's a method that fits for me very well to understand what's going on in relationships. It's one of the best ways to see what is the quality of a relationship if you use the method of constellation. Yeah, if you want to have this PowerPoint presentation available for yourself, so feel free to look at my website and download it for your own purposes. And maybe those who are a little bit outside of you, it's also then possible for you to get it, to get the whole lecture. So, there are some key questions dealing with this issue of trauma and dealing with this issue with the question of, is it possible to heal the trauma? First thing is, of course, we have to define it. We have to define what does it mean, psychotrauma. Yeah, I have today, this morning I was working with my students, and the concept of trauma we normally have in the society or we have in the public is quite restricted. Yeah, it's quite vague, it's not very clear. So it's very important to have a clear concept of what trauma or a psychotrauma means, and so that we can really make a reasonable connection between trauma and the consequences of trauma. And today one of my students also said, yeah, okay, maybe I'm traumatized. Yeah? I have traumatizing experiences, so I could, in a way, I could can deny it, I can push it away, I can get rid of it. What's wrong with that? Why shouldn't one do that? If you're traumatized and you're happy with that denying of the past, why shouldn't you do that? I say, yeah, okay. As long as you live alone and live isolated, there's nothing wrong with that. But in the moment when you go into relationships, when you have a partner, if you're children, if you are professional working with others, so then that will influence your relationship. So this makes clear, of course, on an individual level, we can ignore trauma. But as far as we are in relationships, it's not fair, in a way, to ignore one's own trauma, because this influences our relationships. So the question is, of course, then, what does it do with us? What does it do with us when we are in a relationship with another person that suffers from trauma? Or we suffer from trauma, what are we doing to another person that is in a relationship with us? What are the consequences of that? The third question is, going beyond the relationships in a small level, looking in a broader view to our bigger system, bigger social systems, and bigger, in the end, maybe to societies, or the society, the world culture at whole. So also we can ask the question, what does trauma do? Do this. bigger systems, our healthcare system, for example, our political system, our law system, philosophy, religion, how those bigger issues are, how far are they influenced by trauma? And I think there are some arguments to that support the idea that trauma really influences bigger and whole systems of human beings. Yeah, of course, when we more and more realize, and this for me is also a process, today one of my students said, hey, okay, if somebody as you has to do with trauma all your life, your whole life, then of course you have this and this ideas about it. And I said, no, I didn't do it my whole life. I just did it for 15 years. In the last 15 years, I really became aware how important the issue of trauma is. And if I would have realized the existence of trauma before in my life, it would have saved me a lot of things I would like to save in my life. But it happened. So in a way, I'm really glad that since 15 years, I know, and even every day I know better what trauma is, and how much it influences us, how much it influences our relationships and what we are doing. And so with this, I see a lot of possibilities to deal with trauma, not to be exposed to trauma, not to repeat trauma again and again, but really realizing what trauma is very, very helpful to avoid trauma or to heal even those relationships that are under the influence of trauma. Yeah, so it's work in progress. In a way, what I'm doing, and I'm traveling a lot or in many countries also, what I'm doing is learning. I'm still learning. I'm sure that this workshop we're doing, this training we're doing, this weekend, I will learn something more about trauma, because it's not so easy to learn about trauma. And one thing is, what's not easy is to learn it on the emotional level too. Yeah, on a cognitive level, you in a way you can understand, you can get some ideas, insights. But what it really means, even in the level of in a deeper level, whole sense, including the emotion, is something we can only learn step by step, and only learn with our own personal development. The more we personally develop, the more we address our own trauma, the more we can realize what we are doing. And the more we can, maybe, even as therapists, realize that sometimes we behave like perpetrators. You can say somebody this idea, you can say, as a therapist, you shouldn't be a perpetrator towards your clients. Of course, it's not allowed, or it's not ethics. But we do it, and we do not realize it. We only can realize it if we address maybe the victim-perpetrator dynamic within ourselves. Then we really feel what we are doing. Otherwise, maybe we see what we are doing, but we do not really understand it, and then we do not change it. We repeat it. Yeah? We only can get out of this risk of repeating trauma patterns if we feel them, not only if we know them. So it altogether is really a work in progress. It's something that develops on a theoretical level when I'm writing my books, and also on a personal level when I'm looking in my own development, and when I look at the development of the many clients I know from over a longer period of time, and I see the how they change and how they progress. And It's really nice to work with trauma. Although on the other hand, trauma is something really awful. But if you work with trauma on an honest level, when you're really honestly doing this work, it's a work that can give you you profit a lot of from it. Yeah. So the multi-generational psychotraumatology. This is what I'm developing in the moment, and developing since 15 years. And it consists of, on the one side, of the idea of the concept of trauma, on the other side, on the concept of bonding, and of transgenerational effects of trauma in bonding systems. What we have trauma in the relationships, and we have from that, we have, it's very clear that trauma is passed on from one generation to the next, from the mother to the child, and from this child becoming a mother to her child. So, what is a trauma? There are some definitions of trauma, not so many, but we have some. And one of these definitions I've written here on this chart, I read it. A trauma is a vital experience of discrepancy between threatening situational factors and the individual's coping capacities that is associated with emotions of helplessness and the lack of any protection, thus creating a permanent instability of the self-concept and the conception of the world. A little bit complex, but on the other hand, quite clear. We have the situation. Trauma always has to do with something outside. Yeah. Something happens in the outside. This is nothing. Trauma is nothing that only happens inside. This is something just has to happen in the outside world. And then on the other hand, we have coping capacities. It was very interesting that my recent experience with my students this morning, one of the students said, she believes that children can tolerate trauma more than adults. Really, imagine what she was convinced in this moment. Children can tolerate trauma more than adults can do. And then she came and said, yeah, when I was 10 or 12 years old, together with some of my colleagues at school, we found our teacher dead. She didn't say if he shot himself or killed himself, but they found him dead. And maybe from this, she got the idea that they, as the child, the children, behaved more reasonable in a way than the adult people. And they, as children, had to support the adult people to deal with the trauma. But sometimes really is the case. Yeah? If it's an infant family, maybe the mother is dying and the father left over and some other children, then the old children take on a responsibility for the parents, to protect the parents, and they can go, then they themselves can realize what's going on within themselves, because they have to protect the adults. And this maybe was her idea, her experience, and until now she was convinced that children can deal with trauma better than adults. In general. And after the break, maybe you convinced me a little bit. That's different. Yeah, that's not the case. Okay, so the capacities, and it's clear that the younger we are, the smaller we are, the more vulnerable we are towards trauma. That for a little child, being left alone for maybe an hour, yeah, crying, left alone, nobody's coming, could be already creating so much panic in this child that the mechanism of splitting off this panic could already happen in this situation. And of course, if you're adult, if you're an adult person, being separated or being alone for 1 hour and nobody there, it wouldn't traumatize you. It's clear, but for a small child, more small baby, it could be that it's traumatizing. So we have coping capacities, and another example would be military person. Military person, if we go in a war zone, untrained as we are, we immediately would be traumatized, feeling helpless, feeling overwhelmed. We cannot tolerate what's going around. Those trained people, the military people, they are not immediately traumatized. There must happen something very specific to traumatize them. So it's also something has to do with life experiences. This has to do with training, with having resources, if we are traumatized or not traumatized. This means the coping capacities. Yeah, but these authors, the German authors, they say if if the trauma once happened to you and you are have experienced this situation, it changes your life forever. It changes the way you perceive your environment, you perceive your relationships, what you're doing. It changes everything. Yeah? It means your self-concept and the way you concept the world. It's total. It has something total in it, the trauma. Yeah? This is one of the arguments why it's so important to understand it and see how much it influences all of us and the whole society. So, of course, my students say, of course, if there's trauma all around us and so much trauma, then we have to differentiate. Yeah? There's smaller trauma and bigger trauma. So, of course, you're right. Yeah, not every trauma is the same, and some experiences are very dramatic and others maybe not so dramatic, but in the end this is trauma. Yeah. And so we have to distinguish between different types of trauma, of course, and there's a traditional distinction that is made by some authors. Let's say one thing is that trauma can be caused by unique events. So one event, one experience, and maybe a rape, a natural catastrophe, an accident. And this is what happened and traumatizes us. The other thing is long-lasting situations. This very often has to do with relationships, domestic violence, child abuse, or being imprisoned, being a slave of somebody else. So long-lasting situations that are a second type of traumatizing events. What's also very important for us to get a specific idea of what trauma is that we can make a distinction between, say, let's say, normal situations, or let's say situations that forces something from you, but if you do it, you become stronger when you do it, or stress situations. And stress and trauma are different. It's very important to understand that the stress reaction is different from the trauma reaction. The stress reaction means we can do something. You're still able to act. And the trauma situation is the end of doing anything. Sometimes, if you work with clients, they have the idea as if they had done something in the trauma situation, even if it was not possible for them. So in their mind, they imagine they had done something, for example, to protect them from the perpetrator, but was not really possible. So we want to avoid this situation where we can't do anything. Of course, we want to avoid it with all the means we have. But the trauma situation is we can't do anything. It's the end of doing anything. As long as we are in a stress situation, we do something. And this is also important for understanding what's going on after trauma situation. After trauma situation, you are in a permanent stress. You are in a permanent pressure. I have to do something, even there is nothing to do. Even you live beyond this situation, the trauma situation is over, but there's still the pressure, I have something to do. I can't rest. Even you can name the risk, you can say what it is, but you still have inside yourself, you are inquired, you can't rest. So permanent stress is a consequence of trauma. It's not the same as trauma, it's the consequence of trauma. And trauma means freeze and fragment. I will explain it more in detail later. Yeah, so my definition of trauma is the following. I say a life experience. All we have to do is life experiences. And if we want to understand why, for example, people are suffering from illnesses, the mental illnesses, why they are sitting in prisons, why are sitting in psychiatric hospitals. If you want to really understand it, you have to look at their biography. The biography of us is the key towards understanding why the symptoms are coming out. So in the biography we have life experiences. One life experience after the other. And the question is, what of these life experiences, what are these life experiences that have the potential to traumatize? Yeah, and so I define it like this. A life experience becomes not only stressful, but traumatic if we face a mortal risk and are incapable of dealing with it with the help of our stress programs. So it is similar to the definition we had before. What I add to this definition is the following. In a traumatic situation develops in a way that if we activate our stress programs, if we do what we normally do under stress, we make the situation even worse. Yeah. By the help of our stress programs, we increase the danger of being killed. So now we have huge conflict. On the one hand, we want to do something, and it's necessary to do something. On the other hand, the more we do, the worse the situation gets. And so this let us end in a state of helplessness and then the need to stop our stress programs. Yeah? Trauma means what can we do to stop our stress programs in the moment when they are fully evolving, when they are fully in action. We have to, it's like you drive with the car 200 kilometers on the motorbike, and now suddenly you have to stop this car immediately. This is what our psyche has to do in such a situation. And the question is, how is it possible? How can we do it? What's for me important is that we see that trauma is something that influences, in a way, everything in us. It influences our physical existence, it influences our psychic system, and it influences our social relationships. It's nothing that's to be isolated only maybe in the brain. To reduce trauma to brain reactions is a reduction of trauma that doesn't really see what trauma really is and what trauma really does. Trauma is more than brain reactions. So, I define in my theory four types of psychic trauma. To keep it simple, not to make it too much complicated. Otherwise, even our clients don't understand. And it's very important that we can communicate our theories towards our clients. So the one thing is of trauma is the trauma of existential threat. That means all those events that involve a life-threatening event, like what I mentioned before, an accident, or somebody tries to kill you, or war situations, all those sorts of events, maybe the birth situation. Imagine, during birth, the birth process, there could be a situation where the life of the mother is at risk, or the life of the child is at risk. The second type of trauma I define as the trauma of loss, existential loss. That means that you lose a person that is absolutely necessary for you. For your existence, it's absolutely less. For your psychological existence, this person is absolutely necessary. And there are... this only one can understand if we understand what the bonding process is, how much we are interconnected, how much it is possible that our structures, our soul structures, our psychic structures are connected with the psychic structures of others. How much we are dependent on this other person. And so it's clear, if we lose this other person, we are every day, every minute, we are referring this person. Yeah? We need this person as somebody that gives us the not only the right to exist, but that gives us an idea who we are. We need this other person to understand who we are, to understand our own existence. And now imagine if this person is no longer there, what traumatic effect this has. The most prominent example, of course, is that the loss of a mother when the baby is very small. It's an absolutely traumatic event for the baby. The mother is no longer there. But also the same for mothers. If they lose a baby, they have this bonding process. That bonding process developed maybe 1 year, 2 years, and suddenly the baby dies. This is for the mother a trauma of loss. And then the third category of trauma, this is not so used to address it as trauma, but I find out in the psychotherapy that is really one of the most important traumas, that we could be traumatized by relationships. Being in a relationship with another person could be traumatizing for us. Or we could traumatize being somebody, we could traumatize another person. The most of trauma do not come out from natural catastrophes. Most of trauma we really suffer from do not come from nature. They come from social relationships. They come from our relationships. So our relationships are traumatizing, can be traumatizing. And it can start very early. And it can start from the very beginning of our life. It can start in our relationship with our mother. The relationship, imagine, normally we think the best thing that can happen, we have the relationship with our mother. And we are lucky and happy, and the mother is happy and lucky with us. So that should be like this. Yeah? But it could also be that from the very beginning, for the child, the relationship with his mother is traumatizing for the child. And in a way, in the other way around, the mother is re-traumatized by the relationship with the child. Having a child could be, for a mother or for a woman, a re-traumatizing experience. I say re-traumatizing, but the child cannot traumatize the mother. That's not possible. What can the child do to traumatize the mother? But the child can do something to re-traumatize the mother. That means that mother before has a trauma already, and now the contact with the child triggers her trauma. And the child cries, child wanted to have contact with the skin, and this all these sorts of needs the child has is a trigger to re-traumatize the mother. So this is of what I then call the symbiotic trauma, or in a more literal way I say the trauma of love, because in the end the symbiotic trauma is the trauma of love, the trauma of wanting love and not able to love, and getting love or not able to love. And then I have a fourth category of trauma. I call this the traumatization of the whole bonding system. When about 10 years ago I was developing these categories, I really did not understand what this really means. But step by step and year by year, I more understood why this category of trauma is really, really important. It's really important to understand this type of trauma. Because it means traumatization of a whole bonding system. That means in this bonding system, all relationships are under the influence of trauma. But also, and this means in such relationships, you only can be a victim or perpetrator. You can't be anything else. Just be the victim or be the perpetrator. And you stay longer enough in such systems, you become both. you have become as well the victim and as well the perpetrator. And every new member of such a system that is included in this system, that is born into this system, has only the opportunity to be victim or perpetrator from the very beginning. And this is very important, because of course the consequence of such an idea and such an insight is we have to leave such systems. We have to get rid of such system. We have to keep our distance towards this system. It doesn't, of course, mean that we solve the problem if we go out of such a system, because it's already inside us. And the system is already part of us. The perpetrator is already part of us. The victims are already part of us. So, but as long as we're in the system, it's not possible to really work internally on the processes, because you need to be perpetrator or victim as long as you stay in the system. Okay, so the traumatic process in itself, if we look at it in more detail, it has on the one hand the situation, and so it's very important for those who are therapists or have to deal with other persons to have an idea or to have a list of situations that could be potentially traumatizing. Yeah? So starting, for example, starting with the conception. Already the conception could be a traumatizing event. It should not be, but it can. Pregnancy, the 9 months in the womb of the mother can offer a lot of situations that traumatize the child. The birth process can be traumatizing. The period after birth, shortly after birth, where it's high sensitive, with high sensitive periods for bonding, can be traumatizing for the child, even re-traumatizing for the mother, and so on and so on. So, go through the biography of a human being and think about it. What can be traumatizing? What potential situations can be traumatizing for somebody else? And then, if you have a client, and talk with the client, then you can ask, "How was it? How was it?" And then you get an idea how much trauma influences this person. So the situation, the experience of the trauma itself, and the short, medium, and long-term consequences of a trauma. Because trauma is something that develops. There's an immediate reaction. There are those reactions when we alter between. I give you an example. One of my students in Munich, she suffered from so that in her home the spot was broken in, and there was a thief breaking up the door and stealing goods from her. And she now, it's really, you can observe here about what's going on with her. On the one side, of course, she wants to cry and be angry. On the other side, she's silent. Doesn't talk, even hesitating to talk with her best friends. And she hesitated to write me an email for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, I think it was about 2 weeks. She hesitated to inform me about what happened. Why is it? Why doesn't she do it immediately and saying, "Oh, something happened to me," and so. Why this silencing? Why this hesitation of talking about it? Has to do with this. This is this reaction, this immediate reaction of a trauma. Because what is the answer to that question is, if we talk about it and say it happened, then it really happened. If you don't talk about it, you can, or maybe after some days, say, "No, it was only a bad dream. It didn't really happen." So our psyche struggles with the attempt to accept it or to ignore it. And so if you are not used, or you are not in a community or not supported by others, then the side of the psyche that wants to ignore it will win. Normally this side will win. If nobody supports you to open up, to talk about it, this ambivalence between it happened, it didn't happen, this side will win that says it didn't happen, it was just a bad dream. Or it happened to somebody else, but not to me. So we see how important it is in trauma, that how our social environments reacts on that. Or if we have contact with others who are aware of those processes and do not allow us to silence it down. So somebody say, okay, what happened? Tell me. Please tell me more. Please say more details about it. Yeah? And the more details you say, the more it becomes real. And the more it prevents you from really splitting off deeper and deeper and deeper. And on the long term, maybe you have panic attacks and have no idea, have no clear where it should come from. And of course, every panic attack you have has a reason. There's no panic attack without a reason. But we have silenced the reason. We have pushed it away in order to believe that it did not happen to us. So, we can also understand that there is trauma when we're looking at symptoms. And symptoms are the key towards trauma, the trauma in the background. And there are a lot of keys for trauma. Nice, yeah, I have this picture of this thief that broke in the house. Okay. There are a lot of symptoms that can show us that there is trauma, that there was trauma, and there is trauma. This hyperarousal, this hypervigilance. Yeah? What I said before, you can't calm down, you can't sleep, you all the time are alert, you think about your all the time you think you have to do something to be carefully do something. That is consequence, very often consequence of trauma. Panic, I mentioned before, or this, that very easily you get overwhelmed and you have to do something that what sounds very simple, but you feel helpless. Maybe a student that has to write an article and is overwhelmed by this. It's not the article itself, it's something that is triggered by the question that I should write an article. Yeah, and also today with my students, depression. What is depression? In the end, is numbness of all feelings. That is depression. Nothing else. And of course, the question is, why does it happen? This numbness of all feelings. Do you have any idea? Why does it happen? Why does it happen? Why we end in a state of depression? It's an open question now to you, please.
We don't like to feel the feelings, so we do feel just the feelings of the trauma.
Yeah, this is important. Yeah, of course, everybody likes to have feelings. Normally, we like to have feelings because without feelings, everything is so boring. And having feelings, something happens. It's exciting. It's pleasurable. So, but wanting not to feel the trauma, what happened in the trauma situation, leads to a process where you suppress feelings at all. Where you try to cut out feelings. Yeah? To say, I have to live on, and the only way I can live on is without feelings. And then you end in depression. The only way you can do it then is to nourish from the feelings of others. To take the feelings from others, but not yourself, your own feelings. Yeah? That you get an emotional junkie, you get feelings from the others. Because you have to avoid your own feelings then. Yeah, and then on the level of our mind, these are nightmares, they are intrusions of the traumatic situation that come into our mind very often at night. You can't sleep and wake up because something in our dreams is very frightening. And what's very specific for trauma is that we avoid to deal with trauma. Avoidance behavior is to avoid the situation, to read something about what happened to us, to look, even not looking at the newspapers or looking at films, but some some people who are traumatized go very far in their reducing their interest in the world, because they fear whenever I'm interested in something in the world, it can trigger my memory, and so I avoid. And so it's very specific that the most severe traumatized people are those first that avoid most the contact with psychology. They want to go to the psychologist because they fear if they go to the psychologist, it could trigger the memories, what happened to them. So they say, of course, I'm not interested. I'm happy how I live. It's not necessary. So I don't have to do anything in this way. Yeah, this feeling of unreality sometimes. Yeah, so if you have to avoid reality so far, that in a way you live in your own space. Yeah, having lost, you can, by this avoiding strategies, you can lose contact to reality, very sometimes completely, and then we are in a schizophrenic situation or schizophrenic symptoms. Depersonalization, dissociation, somatization. Yeah, somatization maybe is something that's important too. Last week I did a workshop in Germany about physical illnesses, and to make it clear how trauma can influence and how trauma can produce these physical symptoms of physical illnesses. And if you really look at it, you can find it. You can find that the only language we have, you know, before I talked about silencing, we silence, we don't talk about trauma, but then our body starts to speak. This body, the body then is the one that expresses that there is something that has to be spoken out. Yeah, hallucinations, losing bonding capacity. Hallucinations, this is what I now, I'm really convinced that with this understanding of trauma, we can understand psychiatric illnesses. We can understand psychosis. We can understand schizophrenia. We can understand manic depression. We can understand anorexia. Whatever is there in the field of psychiatry, we really can find a reason for these symptoms. It's possible. And we don't not have to refer to genes or epigenes or what all those discussions we have in this field. It's possible. You look at the life experiences, to look at the biography, to look at the biography of the former generations, and to find out the reasons why there are hallucinations, where there is psychosis, where there is schizophrenia. Yeah, the last point here is losing bonding capacities. It's something. It's very hard to realize this. Being traumatized means losing the capacities to have a good relationship. Have you any idea why it can be like this? That by being traumatized, we lose our capacities to have good relationships. Too difficult a question?
You're afraid of re-traumatizing yourself. The relationships might re-traumatize yourself, so you avoid them.
Yes. We have made the experience as another person traumatizes you, to try to keep distance to this person. Yeah. I think about the feelings. If you really numb your feelings, how can you make a good relationship? Being all the time in an avoiding behavior, not to try especially to feel yourself, how can you have a good relationship? How is it possible? It's not possible. Okay. I said before that we have to look at trauma not only on the individual level or maybe only on the physical level, but we have to look at the trauma at the social level. And there we can see in a society and in social communities, there are factors that reinforce the consequences of a trauma. you can diminish the social reactions, they can diminish the consequences of trauma, but they also can reinforce the consequences. And what is reinforcing in the social environment is that nobody feels in our, if there's others, they are not empathetic, they do not feel with you, they do not help you to stay in your feelings or to get access to your feelings. For example, again, say something about the course with my students this morning. Caesarean sections, for example. One of the students said, oh, could it really be that I'm traumatized? How you say, I'm the child of a caesarean section. I said, I don't know if you're traumatized, but maybe, look at it. If you want, you can look at it. Yeah. If you have a little bit of sensitivity, and you realize, try to feel the situation, what's about, how does the mother feel? How does the child feel when this happens? You get an idea how awful it will be. It is for both. And saying it's normal, it's nothing wrong with that. It's unempathetic. It's really unempathetic. Normalizing something that is not normal, or trying to normalize on a cognitive level that is not normalized. If you're a little bit feeling that, you see it's not normal. Ignoring the trauma. One thing for a common in war is a permanent state of traumatizing many people. If we really would say, if you want to have a war and to leave war, you traumatize people. We traumatize them even in the next and former next generation. 2, 3, 4 generations will suffer from what happened now in this war. Then you would be honest. It would be an honest statement. Yeah? But who talks about who makes the connection between war and trauma? Blaming the victim is another thing. Yeah? That those who are the victim, they in the end, they say you are yourself are guilty for that. Yeah? You did something wrong. Not the perpetrator, but you are the victim are wrong. On the other hand, supporting the perpetrators. And even denying the victim's right for compensation and professional help. And I say here really professional help. Because if you're traumatized, you need professional help, not any help. Really needing persons that understand what's going on with trauma and who are able to deal with it. Yeah, and this I mentioned already before, that I think the most significant consequence of a trauma is the splitting of the personality and an inability to manage bonding relationships without stress. Being traumatized means being in a relationship, means being in a permanent stress. And this is the reason why. The reason why, what does this emergency mechanism of trauma, what does it do to us? It splits us, it makes us unaware of minimum half of our existence. On the one hand, it's about our movements, the way we move. You can see, if somebody is trained, he can look at a person, can see the trauma in the body gesture, in the rigidity as well as in the lack of energy in the body. Both is a sign of trauma. Freezing here means the freezing of the feelings we talked about already. Dissociation, it means to go away with your consciousness, away from reality, not wanting to realize what really happened in your mind, and splitting of the whole structure of a personality in order to survive. It's important to mention this too, that this is to survive, it's necessary. You can't avoid it. In this situation, when it happened, the trauma happened, you had to do it, or something inside you had to do it in order to survive, otherwise you wouldn't be here. So it was necessary. But the consequence is huge. The consequence is huge towards the whole personality. The whole personality that after the traumatic experience is not the same as before. And in my idea, this personality from that moment on is divided in three different parts and structures and substructures. The one structure is, that's really important to mention, we still have, after traumatic experience, we still have healthy parts of our psyche. Not everything is lost. It's very important to understand this. It gives us hope, you know, that we can overcome this situation. But on the other hand, sometimes the healthy parts are the observers of the struggle between the two other parts. As if sitting in the audience, no? as if sitting in the audience and in the stage, observing the struggle between the traumatized parts and the surviving parts. As if looking at your own life trauma on the stage, those two parts are struggling all the time. And what are you doing? What is the struggle about? The struggle is about that the traumatized parts want to show, they want to show up. They want to solve the problem they did not solve yet. And the other part wants to push it down and invests a lot of energy to suppress this red part. And they are fighting like in a Indonesian game or so. When I was there, I saw that this fighting between the dragons, yeah, the dragon, the white dragon, the rabbit, they're fighting against who wins in the end, who wins this game. So, diagnosing the trauma history of a person means that we look at the trauma we suffered ourselves during our biography. This is the one thing that's now maybe clear, yeah? But it's not enough. To understand how and why we are under the influence of trauma, it's not enough to only to look at our own biography. It's also important to look at the biography. This is the first point. Other points, to look at the biography of those we are in a bonding relationship. You can't understand yourself in all your relations if you do not understand what trauma might happen towards your mother. Only then you can maybe understand why you have some anxieties, have some pictures of war situations. Even you were born after the war. And it can happen that you took over in the bonding relationship with your mother, you took over the fears or even pictures from her experiences during the war. So the points in between are sometimes you have, it seems like there are situations where somebody comes and says, I suffer from an accident, a car accident, and then you try to do something in the therapeutic work with the car accident, but then it shows it's not the car accident, it is something behind the car accident that now comes up. That means a trauma that happens today can trigger the trauma that happens 30 years ago. And this is also important to be aware of it if you work therapeutically with your clients. Okay. So far about theory. Before I continue with the method, the constellation method, do you have any questions or comments to trauma? Do we have a microphone?
Yes, we do.
So it's easier for the others to listen to your question.
In the start you talked about different sorts of trauma, and there was one trauma I missed. Maybe you talked about it, but I missed it, so I'll ask. The responsibility trauma, that trauma that you sometimes have actually, yeah.
What your concept of responsibility?
My concept, it's especially these days, we have the 22nd of July in Norway. Mm-hmm. We have people who have been like ignoring stuff, and they feel like a responsibility that something have happened because of their ignoring stuff. In my work as a social worker, I work with youngsters that it's quite difficult. Or dangerous, they might kill someone. What if one of my boys kills someone tonight and I'm responsible for not doing something with it? Responsible of my child running outside the road and being hit by a car. Mm-hmm.
But what is traumatic about that?
You are responsible. You are actually responsible. And you didn't do your work.
But what is traumatic in that? You are maybe something happens and you feel responsible. But what is traumatic in that?
People that get killed or people because of your lack of action.
Yeah, I think it's very. One has to think about clearly about it. Yeah. So. As far as I understand, you say there are young children or youngsters that do actions that could kill their life.
Or
other people, yeah. Mm-hmm. Of course. Then I would think in the background there's some trauma in this young children or youngsters, no? Mm-hmm. Maybe a perpetrator victim dynamics, they are come from a bonding system trauma mm-hmm. background. Could be. Mm-hmm. Okay. And now you're a social worker. Mm-hmm. And you think you're responsible what's going to happen there?
No, not too responsible what they are doing, but I might could have done something mm-hmm. in beforehand so they didn't do this. The same with the politicians, all those people have been looking at problems we have in the society. Mm-hmm. And
Do we have really the right concepts and do we really not know what to do and have you enough money or... Mm. In order that you say, I'm responsible. It's really true. That you can really take over all this responsibility. Is it possible? Understanding trauma helped me a lot to see what I can do and what I can't do. And where really my responsibility is, and where I'm not responsible. And what I learned is that there's a special type of trauma that creates such an attitude that I'm responsible, even if I'm not responsible. And that is the symbiotic trauma. When I take over as a child responsibility for my parents, even as a child I'm not responsible for my parents. But I feel as a child responsible for my parents. And this is a surviving strategy of in symbiotic trauma, in my concept. Okay, so for me, it's something like this responsibility trauma, it doesn't make sense. There's another question. But thank you for the question. This is interesting to understand.
So what you have been talking about, it's that if, for example, your father and your mother, both of them, experienced traumatic experiences during their life, I, as a child, would try to take it over, to carry it on, and then I can get ill or I can get some psychological problems, but I'm worried about my own children. What can I do just to stop it?
Very, very important question, and it really has to do with responsibility. No? Mm-hmm. And the moment you realize that there's something like this, that this transference of trauma from one generation to the next, from parents to children, then of course you act really very responsible. If you say, okay, I try to get rid of my burdens of trauma in order not to give it, pass it on. It's a very important thing. I think it's one of the biggest motivations I see in the field of those persons who are attending workshops and who are seeing the therapists on this level. One of the biggest motivations is that parents realize, oh, I suffer from trauma from my own childhood. Now I see my child suffering. What can I do? It's the best to do something with my own trauma. And this is very good motivation. It's very, really good motivation. It's very helpful. In the end, I believe if we as communities, we really are going to make a change process, this is one of the biggest motivation factors in societies. That parents do not want to pass on their traumas on the children. It's good responsibility in a sense, a good way of taking responsibility. Yes, please. We have the microphone here.
So what about soldiers coming back from war, for instance, in the Middle East? They are often identified as having post-traumatic stress. Well, it seems to me that in the media, at least, we are misidentifying the cause of the trauma. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that situation?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the question is, is somebody going to the military if he is not traumatized before? One thing. Are you really taking this risk? Yeah? Are you taking this training, so being a soldier, paid as a soldier? This is one thing. And the other thing is, of course, if you go in war situations, you are traumatizing others and you get traumatized. That's normal. And saying post-traumatic stress disorder is an attempt to reduce the amount of visible trauma to a minimum. That means only those cases where it really can't be ignored, where these people drinking alcohol, not able to doing any work any longer, if they are violent in the family, then you address them as post-traumatic stress disorder. And all others, who are maybe in a way adapted to the situation more or less, they are seen as not being traumatized. I don't believe it. Yeah, please feel free. My students have more questions. All the time, they put it into question that trauma is such a big thing and it's so widespread and could not be.
Many of you have relived their traumas of childhood, and I have. And the thing is that I decided then, back then, when I was a kid, that I should remember everything. And my memory developed accordingly, and I can say I really remember it. I remember all the things. Uh-huh. But would you really advise people to do that? Because this is quite hard sometimes.
It's quite hard.
When you are 4 years, 3 years old, and you decide that you're living reality, that you don't want to others to believe it, then the chances are you may, and you may even have some kids around you that are thinking like this.
Mm-hmm.
I did, for sure.
Yeah.
And I still do.
Yeah. But you absolutely.
What about reliving trauma, because it means that you are experiencing like they happened yesterday. And it means that you are believing, you are thinking about them at the same time. And can you just do that, or what are your take on this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really agree what you say, that it's a hard way to go. If we have this background in our childhood, sometimes very awful things that happen there. So the question is really how to go on with that and how to find the appropriate way to deal with it. And this is, of course, what I like to talk now about is about the way to deal with it, the way to get access to it, and to get access to it in a way that you really can manage it and not being re-traumatized by trying to understand your trauma. That is very, thing is very important. Otherwise, we are too much afraid. If there is no, in a way, no appropriate way to deal with it, and this is what I'm. This is the reason why I'm developing my theory. It's developing my theory because I'm a practitioner, and I want to do my practice as best as I can. And so, it's also a learning process. The one thing is a learning process about the background of trauma, and the other thing is the practice, how to do the best practice in working with trauma and working with a person that are traumatized.
We have another question here as well.
Yeah, okay, please.
Thank you very much talking about trauma. My question is about earthquake. It makes very sad for people, and the children always feel that it comes from God and punishment.
Mm-hmm.
And how we can fight this trauma, because many places in the world we have some catastrophic events like an earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
And the trauma also goes the generation or not, I don't know. And how we can fight these feelings for children,
mm-hmm.
to be good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, okay, thank you. The earthquakes in my categorization would be a trauma of existential threat. Yeah? That means the main feelings are panic. You don't feel safe. The place we were standing is not safe. The buildings you're in is not safe. You observe maybe the death of other people. Maybe this is also, if these relatives, you have trauma of loss involved in that. And of course, if children realize or are in such a situation, they, in a way, they might find safe places. It's one of the most important things, to have a safe place where you say, okay, now I'm safe here, and it cannot happen. But there is a question, can you give this safety to? You say that the earth will never be shattered again. You can't give it. Yeah? So in this process, one also has to make the children clear that it doesn't come from God, it doesn't come from because you have done sins or made something wrong, but it's a natural phenomenon. And the only thing is how we can protect ourselves is to build the buildings more stable, or to avoid living those zones where we know that there's a whole high probability of earthquakes. But even children understand about nature, understand about reality. It's better to understand, to let them know what our earth is and how our earth works, and not giving them such ideas like this is coming from the punishment, from higher energy, or because you did something wrong. That is making extra problems. The problems is big enough. So the dealing with it with children would be to explain them where earthquakes can happen, and saying and telling them that it had nothing to do with their sins or that they did something wrong. So we would create to the earthquake problems, we create a double problem, making them, giving them these ideas of bad conscience. So that's as far as I understood your situation. Mm-hmm.
Do you think we could go on now with the constellation part? And then
we can go on,
questions?
Yeah. I can go on, but I'm always happy with questions.
Yeah. I'm just thinking about the time as well.
You're thinking about the time. You're
the
organizer. Yeah, so, constellation method. Is here anybody who does not know what constellations are and constellation method is? Please show me your hand tonight. Really? Everything knows? You don't know? Okay. Constellation means, in the end, we take human beings as an opportunity to get access to psychological realities. Very simply, if you say, I want to look at the relationship with my mother, yeah? So you take in a group of people somebody representing your mother. Yeah? And it seems incredible, but it happens that this person now can show you something about your relationship with your mother. That's true. That's really true. Yesterday, I say something personal. Yesterday, I did a work for myself, looking at my relationship with my partner, my wife, and we put somebody in for her. And she behaved in a way I could believe, as I know it from her. She really did it, and I couldn't believe it. And it helped me. It helped me to understand what's going on between her and me, and I could sort something out, and it improved the situation. So the constellation method is that person that do not know you, or do not know your partner, do not know your parents, they represent this person's, and it seems as a miracle, they really show you something real from this person, or show you something that belongs really to your relationship with this person. Okay, so in a way, it's really miraculous. But over all the years I do this work, it's now 20 years. I really believe in it, because so many times it is verified. So this is a method that you can get access to psychic structure in general. And if you are the person who wants to get access to your psychic structure, take other people, say you are this or that, and you will get a mirror that you can look in. So for me, this method, if you look at this from a methodological perspective, is a mirroring resonance method. That means you look in the mirror. Normally, if you look in a physical mirror, it will reflect something to you. But this is a living mirror. This is a mirror that can talk. This is a mirror that can move. It's a mirror that can express something. And though it is more than looking only in the mirror, it is something that happens. The reaction of this representative influences you. And so in this process, you have a mirroring resonance process. But then when his reactions changes something in you, and you bring something changed in this relationship, then the other person is changed. So it's a constantly flow of information between those persons, and this has the capacity to go deeper and deeper and deeper. It's only depending from you. It depends from you how much you open it and how deep you want to go. So it's up to you how much resonance you allow to happen. You decide how much. Now we're using it for trauma work. You decide how much you allow it to address your deeper feelings, maybe even your trauma feelings. You are the one who can decide how deep you go in this resonance process. Yeah, and so if we put in the scenery relationships, parents, partners, children, clients, whatever, whomever, we get a picture. We get a picture of the situation, how much maybe the bond trauma is influencing bonding systems, and how good relationships are. Yeah, that's what I said before, but I read it for you. The constellation method is able to diagnose trauma-related symptoms in a unique way. The representative in a constellations are able to show the origin and development of the symptoms. For example, you want to find out what is the reason for my headache or whatever. Then, and you're really interested in you can find out by this way, you can find out and come more and more, the more you want it, more to the origins of the symptoms. And even, and very often it shows the origin of the symptom is trauma, is some event of trauma. Yeah, and to maybe to, if we needed to understand better why this can happen, our in our brain we have neurons that are called mirror neurons that allow this processes happen between the representatives and the person. Yes, and I tell you how fabulous this method is. In my practice, regularly is coming a person. She is in the moment in a psychiatric care, daycare, and she behaves really somehow strange. For some months she didn't talk, and when we made our opening round, I introduced her with her name and explained the others. She doesn't want to talk in the moment because she says, when I'm talking, I'm too much in my survivors, so it's better not to talk. In a way, sounds reasonable, huh? But in her behaviors, it's very reduced, and so not taking any medications, but it's very strange. If you look at her, see her, you would immediately see something's wrong with her. So. But yesterday happened, the following thing happened. I had a client in my office, and we two other men were here in the group, and she, the only woman. And in the way I work with the constellation of the intention, that means you have to find a person that represents your intention. She was the only woman here. And I was very afraid, what can we do now? What will the client do? It was a very serious problem. It was about an anorectic problem the client had. But she stood up, took her as a representative. And she immediately got the point. She did immediately found out what's going on. There was a perpetrator victim dynamics. And she said, I'm afraid of you. Don't come closer to me. I'm afraid from you. And so we could find out that this has to do with the perpetrator victim dynamics in the client. So imagine, even those people that are, every psychiatrist would diagnose as schizophrenic or, they are able on this. To mirror. That means it has nothing, this type of behavior has nothing to do with genes or epigenes or something. It's something different. And the capacity and the ability to mirror, we even small children have, and express it sometimes more clearly because they don't have so much shame to express it. They do it, they just do it. Okay, so what I mentioned before is this constellation of the intention. This is for me the appropriate way to work, to get access to even to traumatic situation. Always starting with a person representing your intention. And of course, if you don't have an intention, you can't start. This is the most important thing, that you have an intention. And what I found out is, if somebody does not have an intention, even in the background is trauma, then the surviving strategies are too strong to allow something to happen. So if you have clients in your office or when you're working, and your clients are not able to say what they want in this session, you do with them, be sure they are dominated by the surviving strategies. They're not able in the moment to open something up. So, what the constellation of the intention is intending to do, is intending to do to support autonomy. Mm-hmm. And autonomy means that the healthy parts are developing, that you're taking, your question here, you're taking over responsibility in a good way. First for yourself. Always first for yourself. Yeah. And it's not easy to take this responsibility when then your background is trauma. And in this way, we all also can show what I call here symbiotic illusions. It can show our surviving strategies. No? They came up. In every constellation, you can then see what is the tendency to show up, that something shows up, and what is the tendency to suppress it and to not to look at it. And what's very important for me, that our offer of trauma work is not re-traumatization. It's not a way to re-traumatize. I'm sure we can't avoid it every time, but we should be aware of it. And as much as we are aware of trauma, the much we can do something to avoid re-traumatization. But it's, all those who work in this theory, be aware that this can happen and do something that it doesn't happen. And one thing is in this, take small steps. Don't wait for the big step happen at once, but allow small steps to take place. In trauma work, this is very important. Because if you do a step that is too big, then the person maybe falls back, yeah, and it takes twice the time to come to the point again. Okay, like this picture. Polar bears. I tell you something later on about this polar. Remember this photo, please. Okay, so what I explained before is how it works, this constellation of the intention. You find, formulate your intention to somebody representing the intention. Then there is an interaction between the client and the representative of the intention. And then for the therapist, his task is to understand what's going on and making some suggestions how this process can be led to a good end. So I don't want to explain it in details, because it would be better to see it in practice, and Marta offers workshops and even in open workshops, and then everybody who is interested in can observe such processes. So just go over this. So in general way, what does it mean to heal trauma? Because in my lecture I said, can constellation heal trauma? What does it mean in general? There are different aspects. And one aspect is what we have to do to bring the healthy part on the stage. Remember my picture before? There is the stage and the traumatized part and the surviving part of doing the trauma. The first thing is when you are as a self, the healthy part is sitting in the audience. Now the healthy part is on the stage. So that means that every work you're doing is bringing the healthy part more on the stage, more back into your life, that you're not longer an observer you love, but you're an actor in your life. So increasing healthy structures is one very important aim in trauma theory, in trauma therapy. The other thing is that reduce the influence of the survivors. And the only way you can do it is to make clear that their attempts are illusionary attempts to solve the problems. In the opposite, what they are doing, they increase the problems, they repeat the problems, and do not solve the problems. That must be clear. And then there is an openness. Many times people need to realize the surviving strategies in order to be open to trauma. To say, okay, maybe there is something, what I try to avoid until now. So, and then maybe there is the opportunity to open some of the gates or the windows towards trauma and look at it and go into contact with it slowly, yeah, and step by step more and more. So if you go through these processes, these emotional processes, then in the end maybe you have only those part, the gates you have to pass. They are, yeah, they have more opportunities than one. Yeah, they can go through different parts of this gate if you like. You decide then. Before you couldn't decide, but now you have the possibility to make decisions for your life. Trauma reduces our possibilities to have decisions. It seems the only way I can do it is like this. If we overcome this surviving strategies, then freedom comes. Then really freedom comes, can come. Yeah, this is the reason why I said the picture before with the polar bear. Because one of my clients criticized me for that. She said, oh, the polar bears, are they really loving each other? Oh, they're fighting. She's right. Not only they're fighting, but I think they both love each other. They are twins, prematurely born twins. Okay, thank you for your audience.